This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, and check the calendar. It's Wednesday. We got to check in with Wes Reynolds. Wednesdays with Wes. Follow him on social media at WesReynolds1. Wes, last night, Tuesday night, there was a lot going on, obviously, in the world, but in our world, the college football world, the first unveiling of the college football playoff rankings with 12 teams in this year's field was announced. And I'll be honest, I know we are in the outrage business. There wasn't too many things that was outrageous. A lot of it was mirroring the AP poll, but I'm curious your thoughts on your beloved Indiana Hoosiers, who on Tuesday's episode, Wes, I vowed no more. I'm not betting against your Hoosiers anymore. 8-1 ATS on the year, 9-0 straight up. I'm curious what you thought, what your fellow Hoosiers thought of number 8 next to the name of Indiana in the playoff rankings.
Yeah, Tim, look, I felt personally that 8 was probably fair based on the fact that, you know, you haven't really beaten a great team yet. Now margin matters too. You've been beating the hell out of everybody you play, and you can only play who's on your schedule, the old saying goes. But there were some that thought maybe Indiana should have been rated ahead of Penn State, because Penn State really hasn't beaten, I think, a great opponent of note. Certainly they had their opportunity last Saturday, but big game James was small game James once again as they lose to Ohio State. So I actually think 8 is probably fair. And then what you saw when the bracket unveiling, the temporary bracket, because it's going to change every single week, they go by who would be the conference champion at that point. So that's why you saw BYU, who would be behind Indiana in the college football playoff, they're ranked 9th, would be like a 4 seed, because they do that. Conference champions get the like the automatic bid and the automatic 4 seeds. But I felt 8 was fair for Indiana. And look, even if you lose to Ohio State in a couple weeks, first things first with Michigan this week, but even if you lose to Ohio State and it's a competitive game, you know, it's still looking promising that even if you're 11-1, that you're going to be one of the 12 teams in the playoff. I think, you know, 10-2, there's no chance with the strength of schedule being what it is. But I felt 8 was pretty much fair for Indiana.
Yeah, there was nothing, you know, I think you can gripe a little bit about Texas and Penn State. Who have they beaten? And I think that's fair. Penn State should, in theory, finish 11-1. So we'll see how the committee keeps them in check. I thought the interesting thing for me, Wes, and we talked a little bit about this yesterday on the podcast, was where is Boise State going to be ranked? And they mirrored the AP poll. They come in at 12. And if Boise State runs the table and BYU gets knocked off at some point here and doesn't win the Big 12, I think there's a realistic shot that the Broncos could earn that first round bye, which I think could be fascinating. But other than that, nothing too crazy from a gambling standpoint. Indiana minus 220, Notre Dame minus 250, Boise minus 250, all those odds courtesy of DraftKings. You know, the one thing I would point out, and I'm curious your thoughts, and I think we hit on this yesterday, which was right now, the odds for Colorado to make the playoff are 2-1, but for them to win the Big 12, it's plus 350. I don't see a scenario where Colorado gets into the college football playoff without being the Big 12 champion. And the other one that's a little bit interesting is SMU. SMU right now, just on the outside looking in, I don't think it's as open and shut as the Colorado situation, but if you're looking to bet SMU at even money to make the playoff, Wes, at plus 260, they are to win the ACC. So I think there's a couple different ways you could look at betting this playoff market. But, you know, right now, I don't really see anything that's immediately jumping out to me of interest from a future standpoint.
Yeah, and the SMU schedule, I think, is certainly accounted in that price that you just indicated, because you have a bye week this week, then you have Boston College coming in. You do got to go to UVA and play Virginia, and then you have Cal, but you're going to be favorite in all three of those games. So I think SMU, look, that win over Pittsburgh, and we talked about that last week, that maybe Pittsburgh was a little bit of a house of cards, and it certainly proved to be 48-25, and it actually probably wasn't that close, and SMU got the win. But Colorado, look, the Big 12 to me, Tim, is a conference where even though you have an undefeated team up there in BYU, I don't think that there's a really great pecking order there. I don't know who the best team is in the Big 12. I think you got a bunch of muck there. Even though BYU is the lone undefeated team, you got a bunch of teams like in a pot, and you close your eyes and you pull one out, and that's who's going to be the champion, because Iowa State loses last week. Colorado is there, Kansas State. I think there's a lot of people that think, just on an eyeball test, that Kansas State is the best team in the Big 12, and then they get beat as almost two touchdown favorites by Houston, on who's had real offensive issues in the first year with Willie Fritz there. But yeah, this is just, it's a conference with nobody that's really great necessarily. It's just BYU still undefeated at this standpoint.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating if BYU runs the table in the regular season and then loses in the Big 12 championship if they get an auto bid, but we'll see how that plays out. And maybe they could be a little susceptible this week. So let's get into the games that we want to discuss here every Wednesday. We try to keep it brief, 25 to 30 minutes or so with Wes, taking a look at some situational spots on the calendar, on the schedule, I should say. And a tip of the cap to you. I thought last week you were able to keep me off of a bet that I was looking at making, and you were on the right side, no doubt, with Rice against Navy. The market spooked me. You were on the right side, so well done by you. I want to go to Pitt. Night game against Virginia. They're coming off of a butt-whipping. And, you know, I'm curious your angle on this one, because I think we're probably going to be on the right same side here. Virginia catching 7.5 at Pittsburgh, coming off of their first loss of the year.
Yeah, Pitt is actually in our first of three, which we're going to get to in this pod, of what I call the bubble burst. And what I mean by that is when you're undefeated, when your O had to go in the loss column, and now you got a single digit there, and having to respond the very following week. And when we mentioned Navy with Rice, Navy, of course, lost to Notre Dame. They go to Rice. Rice had fired their coach, changed their quarterback, and I know there was a big weather delay, but that was all Owls in that game over the midshipmen. And Pittsburgh's in their same situation. Now they're at home and not on the road. But if you look at Pitt's offense, they've really struggled offensively. I know they beat the hell out of Syracuse on the scoreboard, but remember, there were five turnovers, five picks by Kyle McCord. Three of them were pick sixes in the first half, where it was, I think, 31-0 at the half. And you would have thought, oh, man, they're firing on all cylinders. But I think we knew that that was a little bit of a mirage. And they got outgained, by the way, 299 to 143 in the first half at SMU last week, and we're down 31-3, made it a little bit cosmetically pleasing at the end. They were down 48-11, I think, at one point. Virginia, they kind of have fallen on hard times. They were 4-1. Now they've lost three straight, but now they are off a bye week. Anthony Calandra has got to take care of the ball better, certainly, than Kyle McCord did from Syracuse against Pitt a couple weeks ago. Pitt is the better team, but Pat Narduzzi, historically not a very good home favorite. I think 18-24-3 against the number, even though he's 3-1 this year. Tony Elliott, in his short time in Charlottesville, has been a good road dog, 8-3. Yeah, I think that this is kind of that crossroads game for Virginia, where it's like, we're 4-4, and this is going to determine if we're going to be bowl eligible or not, and, you know, at least take the next step in Tony Elliott's second year. So they're in that same boat as a couple other teams in the ACC. So I'm willing to go against Pitt this week and take the 7.5.
Yeah, Virginia, pretty brutal stretch here for them, coming off of their bye week. They were beat up pretty good by North Carolina, but, you know, we were talking about this on Tuesday's pod, which is the, you know, bowl desperation. You look at the schedule: at Pitt, at Notre Dame, home to SMU, and then at Virginia Tech. Not easy for Virginia, and they need this one. So, yeah, that was the side I was looking at, and good to hear that you're on that one as well. We talked about the Big 12 a little bit already. Iowa State, Kansas State, both pretty ugly losses. What a great time for me on Thursday to buy a Kansas State future, Wes, to win the Big 12. Well done by me, as Houston goes in there and wins that game outright, also going over their conference win total. But this game at Arrowhead Stadium, Kansas has been one of the more confusing teams all year long. And, you know, where's their mind at? They're coming off a bye week as well. They lost to Kansas State last time out on that long field goal. I think you and I both, I'll give you credit first, you tipped me off on Kansas, and I did a little more digging. I'm like, yeah, I like Kansas plus the points here. So home dog in air quotes, because this is Arrowhead Stadium. Chris Williams, who does a great job with Iowa Everywhere, he said there will be more Iowa State fans than and Kansas fans, and I wouldn't disagree with that. But coming off a bye, Lance Leipold, short dog here against Iowa State, and as you alluded to, coming off their first loss of the year.
Yeah, and this is another bubble burst scenario. Now, Iowa State, they've got double revenge, if you want to call it, because they've lost two straight games to Lance Leipold in Kansas. Still have a shot at the title. Kansas off their second bye week. Now, four games left. Now, this is a tricky deal for Kansas because you're 2-6. You basically got to win out and deal into an inside straight if you want to get bowl eligible. And are they going to be willing to stay with the season? And that's what you always worry about with some of these teams where it's been disappointing. And you look at Kansas, they're probably a little bit better than that 2-6 record. Lost a one score game at Illinois, lost by 3 to UNLV. West Virginia makes a comeback and beats them down there in Morgantown. They lose by 4 at Arizona State. Then they lose by 2 against Kansas State in the Sunflower Showdown a couple weeks ago. But I'm willing to go with KU plus 3. I still think that they're very well coached. I think that they've played better football progressively throughout the season because a lot was made of the offensive coordinator change with Andy Kolnicki, of course, now taking that same role at Penn State. So it takes time to get used to it. And Kansas isn't to the point where they've like stacked a bunch of really high-end recruiting classes. So they're still trying to improve the talent there. But Iowa State had been playing with fire at least for a couple weeks. And I think that we recognize that when they barely got by UCF, then they had a bye, and then Texas Tech and Joey McGuire, who's a very good underdog, goes ahead and beats them in Ames. So I'm looking at this number, and it's pretty much stuck at 3 almost across the board. It seems like it would be a layup for Iowa State. But be careful here, and we're actually starting to see at least a little bit of support on the KU side, and they have mine getting 3 here.
Yeah, and you know, you and I think very similarly. We are not afraid to take some ugly dogs. Matt Eumann's the same way as well, and I was just curious. Right now, early returns at DraftKings on our betting splits, 86% of the bets early on Iowa State here, which shouldn't come as a surprise. How about this? Kansas 1-4 in the Big 12, plus 7 point differential. Just goes to show you how brutal it's been. You know, 4-point loss to West Virginia, lost by 11 to TCU, 4-point loss to ASU, and then the Kansas State loss. So coming off a bye, you know, where's their mind at? But yeah, I would certainly kind of lean that way and might get me to the window. Last one of the old bubble bursts, as you like to say, Penn State coming off of this loss. I think this is a very tricky spot for Penn State coming off of that loss. They do have it at night. They don't have to travel, but they're taking on Washington here. So, you know, another home spot for a Pennsylvania team coming off a loss. Penn State catching 13 against the Fighting Jed Fishes.
And the spot, at least through the season, for the traveling team has not been good in the Big Ten, in this new Big Ten that goes across 4 different time zones now. But I think it's a little bit better for Washington in the fact that this is a night game. This is not like going and playing Indiana at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern, like they did a couple weeks ago when College Game Day was in town. So it's a little bit different. I want to get 14. I believe there might have been a couple of those out there, but they disappeared. You're now getting 13.5. Washington, you know, you have to look at it, Tim, is like, did they save their season kind of last week? And saving their season to get bowl eligible, obviously not in the college football playoff rankings, but they hung on against USC, got a couple big stops late. Steve Belichick, the defensive coordinator, I think has done a pretty good job with this team, considering that they lost a lot in the draft. Look, this is a new regime, new coaching staff. There's only a few remnants of the national runner-up team that lost to Michigan in the national championship game. But if I want to get 14, I don't know if it's going to reshow here. It's a lowish total at 46, but it would be Huskies or nothing for me because I wonder about Penn State because now you got to get over, oh God, we had a close game and a winnable game yet again against Ohio State. and couldn't get it done. You know, the play calling on the goal line certainly was questionable. The Buckeyes made the goal line stand and then ran out the clock and won a grinder of a game 20-13. So, you know, you got to wonder about Penn State. And also, is there confidence in Drew Aller anymore? Or do they go to Bo Prabula in terms of, like, exclusively? Drew Aller actually ran the ball very well, and their best offense were on broken plays, but they could not really make very many plays in the passing game down the field. And this is a tough test. Steve Belichick has these guys, I think, doing very well and getting stops, and they were able to get pressure on Miller Moss last week in that where they held on against USC. So, UW, I'd love to get 14 here. I would still lean that way, 13.5.
All right, let's take a quick break with Wes, and then when we come back, we've got three other games, including the two biggies in the SEC. It's Wednesdays with Wes.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Just a reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. 3 episodes a week now moving forward. And Wes Reynolds, kind enough to hang with me on Wednesdays, Adam Burke on Tuesdays, and then Matt Newmans as we break down the full card with our best bets on Thursdays as well. So we've got 2 big ones in the SEC. I'll hold those for the end because we've got BYU at Utah. And this was the first game that I kind of gravitated towards this week because I like pain. Utah's been awful this year. They're coming off a bye, as is BYU. And this has been a lost season for Utah. We all know that. But I think you can make the argument, kind of like we did last week, and we got some fortunate injury news with Bryson Daly being ruled out for Army, about Air Force. You and I both plugged our nose, took Air Force in what was kind of the Super Bowl spot. It feels like this is going to be the Super Bowl for Utah. They have an opportunity to kind of ruin things for their in-state rival that they do not like. So we've got Utah catching 4 here. Interest in the dog, Wes?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the things about this conference realignment, which, look, has obviously got out of control and it's not going to change anytime soon. But one of the good things that we do have is we do have the Holy War back. And they last met in 2021, so we've been without it a couple years. So BYU and Utah is a really underrated football rivalry and really in all sports. And like you mentioned, Tim, Utah's dropped 4 straight, no Cam Rising the rest of the season. Isaac Wilson, whose brother Zach played at BYU, has been just okay. Brandon Rose, the third stringer, actually got into the last game and, you know, really struggled a little bit with accuracy. I think he was 7-15, but Utah's defense is still very good. They're holding, opponents well under their season average for yardage. I think in Big 12 games, they're only giving up 19 points a game and just over 300 yards, but the offense has been a little bit anemic. BYU's pass D has been good because they've been forcing a lot of turnovers. I think they have 14 interceptions that they've gotten this year. But like you said, Tim, I think that this is the Super Bowl for Utah, being 4-4, lost season, first season in the Big 12 here. And you and I think, are both big fans of Kyle Whittingham.
Yep.
Because this isn't a Utah team. This is a Utah team that will get out talented sometimes, but they won't get out tough. They very rarely lose the toughness battle. And that's a team I like to take points with, is a team that's tough and physical in the trenches. Not that BYU is not, but that's really Utah's hallmark here. And I have not been a believer, and I've gotten some flack on social media for it because I've been a little cynical of BYU really all year. And, sometimes it's benefited me to go against them, sometimes not. Benefited with Oklahoma State, where I thought Oklahoma State should have won the game. And then I took UCF, and BYU was the clear right side in that game. So I think that they've been living close, though. They got lucky at SMU because they got Jennings in his first start when they benched Preston Stone and won that grinder of a game on Friday night. The Kansas State game was 38-9, but that was lopsided because of turnovers and special teams touchdowns. They hung on against Baylor. Arizona was the same way. Arizona outgained them, and then, you know, a lot of turnovers went their way. So they've been getting a lot of fortune this year. You know, we talk about sometimes a team runs good and a team runs lucky. I think BYU has, and the Utes plus 4 definitely interests me here.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. And look, BYU, it might be another situation where I come on the podcast next week and say never again. Now, Indiana, I would say, in my opinion, has just been steamrolling people more so than BYU. But look, this is the late night game. You know it's going to be juiced up there. It's the Stormy special. She'll be on the sideline for this one on ESPN. So yeah, I'm going to take the dog here. Yeah, it's funny. I've definitely profited more on BYU games than Indiana games. I've been wrong. You know, you mentioned UCF. I took Baylor against them, where Baylor had an opportunity, but they were the favorite in that role. So we will see what BYU has in store for them as a road favorite here in this particular spot. Let's get to the two biggins, and we'll go in chronological order of when these games will tip kick off as Georgia takes on Ole Miss. And, you know, this one I'm curious to hear your analysis on it because I've gone back and forth. Georgia was a road dog at Texas, a spot that I like the dogs. They've been up and down. Carson Beck is really enjoying throwing interceptions this year. And then we saw Jackson Dart maybe play his best game ever against Arkansas last week. He was flawless. So you've got Ole Miss, 2.5. You can get a 3 if you do like the dog at Circa. Curious your angle on this one, Georgia at Ole Miss.
Yeah, Georgia, of course, was a nip and tuck very early against Florida. I'm not surprised they pulled away and won the game. But once the kid Lagway went out of the game for Florida, that quarterback, and they put Aiden Warner, that Yale transfer, in, he never had a chance and just couldn't survive the onslaught of the Georgia pass rush, and Georgia pulled away. But you mentioned with Carson Beck, you know, enjoying the fruits of the labor, I guess, of being the starting quarterback and, you know, one of the Cavender girls providing a distraction for Carson Beck. It certainly would for me. I'll admit that. But nevertheless, he did throw 3 picks last week. And this Georgia team, look, they're still very good because their ceiling is so high. But there is something to me, Tim, that I think does seem a little bit off with this team. They're still very physical. You know, they've had off the field issues, guys, you know, driving when they shouldn't be, consuming certain beverages and whatnot, and some off the field issues. But I look at this and I do like Ole Miss here, and there's still some 3 out here. I know you're buying off Jackson Dart throwing for 515 and 6 touchdowns here, but this Ole Miss defense, and I think up front, they can hang with Georgia, and they might be one of the few teams in the country that can do that in the trenches. If you look, Ole Miss defense, they lead the country in sacks with 41. Now, the Georgia offensive line, they've only given up 10 all season. Georgia has certainly played the tougher schedule, but Ole Miss, look, they need this to stay in the mix for the playoff spot at 7-2. I do not think that they're out of the mix by any stretch, and a win here really puts them, I think, right square in the mix for the college football playoffs. So I do like Ole Miss here a little bit. I think that they're a little bit more dynamic offensively than Georgia is. And I'm going to trust Jackson Dart a little bit more, not just with his arm, but with his legs. I just think that they can generate maybe more explosive plays than Georgia, whereas Georgia kind of like gradually wears you down with that running game, right? But Georgia does not have, I think, the big play capability that they've had over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and this is the old desperation spot, right? You hit on. Ole Miss is probably eliminated from playoff contention with a loss. Georgia definitely is not. Georgia has Tennessee next week, has a great win over Texas. So Georgia's in fine shape to make the playoff. So you do wonder if you get quite the desperation mode. All right, final game we'll hit on here. And it's a game that I wish I was attending because I would love to be down in Baton Rouge for this one. Maybe our guy Jimmy Ott can hook us up one of these days with some awesome tickets or something like that. But we've got Alabama at LSU. Night game, both these teams coming off a bye, so there's no rest advantage one way or another. This is an elimination game, Wes. The loser of this game, I know you're a wrestling guy, right? Was it leave
loser
or go
leave
home?
Loser leave town.
Loser leave town. There you go.
As I loser I, leave the territory. Yes,
I go into my attitude WWE era. But Alabama LSU, Bama right now laying 3 on the road at most shops. There is a 2.5 at DraftKings. So if you're looking to grab the favorite, there is a 2.5 out there, mostly 3s though. How are you looking at Bayou Bengals and Crimson Tide? Total 58.5 here.
Both teams off the bye week is as typical, but before the Alabama LSU matchup every year. Alabama got him last year after they lost in Baton Rouge the year before, Brian Kelly's first year, where Alabama was laying 13.5 down there at Tiger Stadium. Alabama got the win again last year. Now, What I want to see mainly from LSU, and that's who I'm leaning with here and probably eventually going to take, is that are they better prepared to stop a quarterback that can use his legs, which certainly Jalen Milroe can. Remember, he ran for 155 on LSU's awful defense last year, and their defense is better this year, at least. It's not near as bad. Like that was one of the worst defenses that you'll ever see out of a high-end program there at LSU. But last time we saw the LSU defense, they were great in the first half, and they shut down that A&M offense, and then Mike Elko and the Aggies went to Marcel Reed, and they had no answer. I just think that was a, you know, kind of being caught with your pants down. They weren't prepared to face this guy. It's like, okay, we've got Connor Wigman figured out. And then they went to Reed, and then there was nothing they can do. But then we saw Reed last week, and we talked about this matchup, A&M and South Carolina, where we were on the Gamecocks. They seemed a little bit more prepared. And now I think LSU is going to be more prepared for what Jalen Milroe brings, especially in the running game. Garrett Neusmeyer also threw a couple interceptions in that loss to A&M, but he's made big-time throws. Remember that comeback where they were uphill the whole game, and they came back and they beat Ole Miss. I think the Tigers maybe are a little bit more out of sight, out of mind. By the way, Alabama, even with two losses, still, I think, number 11, I believe, was their ranking, Tim, in the college football playoffs. So, you know, they're still getting the benefit of the doubt, and I guess rightfully so when you beat Georgia, who's one of the top teams up there. But elimination game here, I'm going to go with the home underdog. Home underdogs, by the way, and really underdogs in general in the SEC. Now, you know, make the trend your acquaintance and not necessarily your friend, but underdogs in these SEC games this year, Tim, it is astounding what they've done. 29-13 against the number that is 69% this year. So I think you're going to add a couple to that win ledger in terms of that trend. So I like LSU here.
Yeah, Vanderbilt 6-0 ATS this year as an underdog, and they're a dog again. Real quickly, you and I were on the wrong side of that. I threw Auburn into a money line parlay. Mm-hmm. Very poor performance. I do wonder, and I was talking to a buddy of mine about this spot here, and I'm sure a lot of people are going to gravitate once again to the dog, and I don't blame you. South Carolina coming off the big win. My question is, Vanderbilt at home catching 3.5 here, Wes, are they out of gas? Like, this has just been banger after banger for Vanderbilt, and they are bowl eligible now, and South Carolina, let me double check this. I think they need another win to get the bowl eligibility. So, you know, I know that, you know, you sometimes have to pay the tax. I would just be hesitant to quickly back the dog here in Vanderbilt. South Carolina still has a game against Wofford, so they'll get the bowl eligibility, no problem. But I'm curious if you had any thoughts on Vandy, South Carolina. I'm conflicted on both ends. This might be a stay away for me.
Yeah, I might be staying out of this one as well, because, and I was on the wrong side with Auburn. Now you look at the stats, and Auburn was probably a little bit better with Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt, Diego Pavia is showing some wear and tear. He's taken a beating this year. He's produced, but he's taken a beating, and you saw it kind of materialize last week. 9 of 22 for 143, two touchdowns, did not throw an interception, but only 12 carries for 26 yards. So the Auburn defense really did its job. They held Vanderbilt to 227 yards, but Auburn just so poor offensively, couldn't make a third down, and Vanderbilt wasn't great at that either. Auburn was 2 of 13 on third down last week and couldn't run the ball. They ran the ball, and that's what surprised me. They ran the ball so damn well against Kentucky, and then Jarquez Hunter only 12 carries for 50 yards. So, you know, maybe that says a lot more negative about Auburn than it does positively about Vanderbilt. But you are paying the tax, like you mentioned, with South Carolina. Eesh. These are two teams I kind of want to both go against, but unfortunately they're matched up against each other.
Yeah, no doubt. I was thinking, I'm like, all right, who's South Carolina played this week? Oh, Vanderbilt. Seems like it's going to be a trendy dog situation, but hey, Vanderbilt, to those of you who have backed Vanderbilt, Indiana, the Washington Commanders, and the Detroit Lions, congratulations.
They're going to come back on it, man. It doesn't matter, like with the Lions. Get out game by 200 yards and you just win in dominant fashion.
Yeah, it is not a whole lot makes sense, but congrats to all of you who have been nailing it there. Wes, always appreciate it, my friend, and make sure you check out his picks. Number one on the picks page, VSiN.com/picks. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber and you get access to all of our picks, and Wes is no doubt always firing away on all sports. So, Wes, always appreciate it, man. Have a winning week.
You bet, Tim. Thanks for having me.
There he is, our guy Wes Reynolds. Wednesdays with Wes. We're back tomorrow with Matt Eumanns to break down the full card. Once again, this is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.